Businesses have a responsibility throughout their entire value chains to respect human rights. If you can apply pressure at the top of the supply chain strategically, then you can achieve change at the bottom.
You are listening to Radio Atticus,
your national program on the law in the name of social justice.
This is obviously a live issue and we need to start to talk about how we might regulate it here that we aren't outsourcing our problems.
People are curious. They look at you and they want to know your story.
Radio Atticus, more than the vibe. Hello and welcome to your national program on the law and justice and how it impacts your daily lives. Anna Marie Reyes.
Hi, I'm Sophia Carvajal. I'm joining Anna Marie on your favourite legal broadcast.
Recently, when a group of white neo-Nazis attacked a protest against President Trump's anti-migrant policies, the protest turned violent and fatal in Charlottesville, Virginia. A car plowed into the crowd, killing a young woman and injuring 19 people. Meanwhile, even Trump's own Republican colleagues are beginning to criticize him, admonishing Trump for taking the side of the white supremacists. Trump continuously denies this, saying there was violence on all sides. Back in Australia, in her true form, One Nation leader Pauline Hanson shocked politicians in parliamentary session when she turned up wearing a black burqa to protest against Muslim values. It would seem bigotry is rearing its very visible ugly head again around us, so Radio Atticus sees it fit that we revisit the stories of many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who achieved great outcomes and were showcased at the recent NAIDOC events 2017. Before that, here's some excerpts of comments to date unfolding in the US media following the Charlottesville carnage on August 12.
We are determined to take our country back. We're going to fulfill the promises of Donald Trump. That's what we believed in. That's why we voted for Donald Trump, because he said he's going to take our country back.
They were pretty clear about the message that Trump had sent to them with his response.
This is from an infamous neo-Nazi website, quote, Trump comments were good. He said he loves us all. Also refused to answer a question about white nationalists supporting him. No condemnation at all. When asked to condemn, he just walked out of the room. Really, really good. God bless him.
I didn't wait long. I wanted to make sure, unlike most politicians, that what I said was correct, not make a quick statement. The statement I made on Saturday, the first statement, was a fine statement, but you don't make statements that direct unless you know the fact. It takes a little while to get the facts. You still don't know the facts. And it's a very, very important process to me. And it's a very important statement. So I don't want to go quickly and just make a statement for the sake of making a political statement. I want to know the facts. If you go back to my, in fact, I brought it.
I have to ask you, as an American, on a personal level, are you worried about the direction that your country is taking right now?
I'm both worried and certain that in the long run, as Martin Luther King said, the arc of justice bends toward equality. Every time we've seen an episode of this kind of racist violence, it's only emboldened the cause of social justice. So, for example, you'll remember that the Confederate flag a few years ago was the occasion of a racist episode. And since then, more and more of these historic racist symbols, like the statue of Robert E. Lee, are being removed from public places. It just happened, for example, in New Orleans, Louisiana, that they decided to remove their Confederate symbols. And so racist violence often backfires. Of course it's abhorrent. Of course we all wish it hadn't happened, that somebody had driven a car into a crowd of peaceful protesters and killed an innocent bystander. But the very fact that that brings to the surface the nature of racism, which is itself violent, leads people to understand that we've got to get beyond it. So it's a long struggle, and it's a struggle with a lot of disheartening episodes along the way, but I'm confident that America will live up to its ideals, and that in time the Trump administration will look like an aberration.
And now to reporter Sophia Carvajal as we revisit her coverage of the National Aboriginal and Islanders Day Observance Committee, or NAIDOC, this year.
Our Languages Matter is the theme this year for NAIDOC Week, celebrating the history, culture and achievements of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Despite 250 Aboriginal languages existing, only 100 are spoken, and of those, only 20 are being taught onto the next generation. Here's an excerpt of the winner of the Male Elder of the Year recipient for NAIDOC Week, Alex Ollie George, who's been keeping his native tongue, the Badimia language, alive since the 1990s, from his generation to the next.
Area, we call it a Badimoy. When I was a little boy, my grandmother and grandpa taught me how to talk Badimoy, and I never forget from that day to today. And I'd like to thank once again all my people back there, around Mount Magnet in Geraldton. I've got some granddaughters in Geraldton and my grandson. So I thank very, very much for all the people in this place, is it called?
Cairns.
Yeah, hello everybody. I'm the grandson of Ollie George. Privileged to be up here. I'd like to acknowledge your fellow's country and the traditional owners. And we migrated from WA, it's a long way and we're missing home, but we never come to another. My old grandfather, he's still going strong. So yeah, it was a trip of a lifetime and it was something to remember for the rest of my life with my grandfather. Thank you.
You just heard NAIDOC Week's Male Elder of the Year recipient, Alex Ollie George's acceptance speech for his work keeping his native language called Badimia alive. The Lifetime Achievement Award went to respected Noongar community leader Diane Ryder from Western Australia. Diane is part of countless community initiatives and is the president of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Veterans Association of WA. She also has an Australian of the Year nomination under her belt and is a passionate advocate for volunteering to help improve communities. Here's her speech on the topic.
I retired in 2011 and I'm now on probably 12 or 13 committees in my community. Now people say, yeah, I'm retired, and I go to meetings and they say, hey, Di, where do you work? And I said, oh, I'm too busy to work. I can't work. I mean, really, I've got too many things on my mind. Don't even ask me where I work. So for me, volunteering, and I believe that each and every one of us has the ability to volunteer. And my just imagines, and I like, and you can volunteer. And it really isn't difficult. And I like to say this, just 1 hour, just imagine, that if each and every one of us, even in this room, can give 1 hour a week. Now, if you break that down, that's 10 minutes a day. And if we can give it out to our community, imagine the difference we can make to our community. It's not hard. In all honesty, it's not hard. Volunteering and my community plays such an important part in my life, but my family have to be the most important people in my life. My mum passed away in 2006, and she still inspires me today, even after that amount of time. And my dad, oh, such a gentle man. He's going to turn 90 this year, and he is still and plays such an important part in our lives. My brothers and sisters, you know, they've been there the whole time, not just my personal achievements, but also for everything I do in community. Now, I do things like, you know, deliver blankets out and backpacks for kids at the beginning of the school year and food if they need it. But my family is always there every step of the way to ensure that whenever I need assistance, they are there to help me. I've got to say I'm honoured. I'm really humbled to receive this award because this is about a community for me that comes together, that reconciliation really isn't just a word, but they practice it on a daily basis where they make a difference by meeting with elders, by meeting with community, and they make that conscious effort to make a difference to the Midland community where I come from. So I am honoured. I can't put this into words as to what this means to me. Thank you very much.
Diane Ryder there, the NAIDOC Week Lifetime Achievement Award winner, talking about the power of volunteering for your community.
This story's right, this story's true. I would not tell lies to you, like the promises they did not keep, and how they fenced us in like sheep. Said to us, come take our heed, set us up on mission name, told us to read, to write and pray. Then they took the children away, took the children away, the children away. Snatched from their mother's breast, said this is for the best, took them away. Welfare and the police came, said you've got to understand, we'll give to them what you can't give, teach them how to really live, teach them how to live their self, humiliated them instead, taught them that and taught them this. Others taught them prejudice, took the children away, the children away. Breaking our mother's heart, tearing us all apart, took them away. One dark day on Framlingham, came and didn't give a damn. My mother cried, go get their dad. He came running, frightened me. Mother's tears were pouring down. Dad shaped up and stood his ground. He said, you touch my kids and defied me. Then they took the stronger family, took us away. They took us away, snatched from our mother's breast, said this is for the best, took us away. The children came back.
the children came in. Back where they understand, back to their mother's land, the children came in. Back to their mother, back to their father, back to their sister, back to their brother, back to their people, back to their land. All the children came back. Yes, I came back.
Archie Roach there with the song Took the Children Away.
Do you want to know something about Sydney? A query about Queenscliff? A pondering about Paddington? A thought about Thornlie? A reflection on Randwick? A postulation on Parramatta? A musing of Marrickville? 2SER is seeking Sydney. Head over to 2SER.com and ask the questions you want our team to investigate and answer. While you're there, why not vote for your favourite question? 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music.
UCI Para World Cycling Champion Amanda Reid is Gurunagi and Wamba Wamba woman from Sydney and an accomplished Indigenous Paralympic athlete. She's also the first Aboriginal cyclist and medalist to win silver at Rio 2016 and has been an Australian Day ambassador in the past. Amanda was honoured this year with a Gong for Sportsperson of the Year for her strength and determination over adversity. Here she talks about her tough childhood being bullied for having a learning disability and how she overcame these obstacles to become the accomplished high achiever she is today.
It's the pinnacle of sport, the Paralympics and the Olympics. When you win a medal there, you've done the best job you can. You're basically the best in the world. And then for somebody to beat you, they've got to wait 4 years. So when you get that medal around your neck, you run through so many emotions, just happy, joy, you want to cry at the same time. After Rio, I was determined to win that gold. There was no doubt about it. I'm training hard for the next 4 years to win that gold. I want that gold. My name's Amanda Reid. I was born in Penrith and then we lived in the Lower Blue Mountains. Well, I have an older sibling, so I always remember doing sport, being dragged along, especially early morning swim sessions. It was always sport for me because I have an intellectual disability, so education was never there. I could never get past grade two. When I was at school, I used to be called Chocky Milk, Abbo, all the names you could basically think of underneath the sun, and nothing ever used to get done about it. So I used to just plod along, just going, just ignoring. All you can do is ignore the bullies. There was another time I was sitting at a desk and this kid came along and whacked all my, like, threw all my stuff off the desk and then said, that's where Abbo sit on the floor. And the teachers did nothing. And basically had to sit the whole lesson on the floor. I was like, why? Why me? Because I had the disability as well. Why do I have this disability? And then being Aboriginal, why do I have that on top? But then it's became a blessing when you think about it. I've been all around the world and they're still sitting in the Blue Mountains. So you look at it that way. Now who's getting the last laugh? So sport was there as to bring up my social skills. So I learned how to talk properly, I learned how to socialise, and that's helped me today where I've been, where I am now, where I'm sitting in front of here having this interview, leading to other things and helping other kids with intellectual disabilities and parents showing that sport is important for people with disabilities as well. I think it was really about 2009 when I actually realised that I had potential in swimming and that I could actually go to the Paralympics. So that was sort of when I won a medal at Nationals, when I actually realised I could swim really well. But yeah, my goal was to make the Paralympics and to make the final. And that was actually supposed to be Rio for me, not London for swimming. So to make London was just, I guess, luck. Especially at 15, so young, didn't realise what was ahead of me. Standing there behind the blocks for the final was just amazing. You don't realise all the stuff they've had to overcome, like racism, everything, just to stand behind those blocks was just amazing. The moment I thought I was done with swimming was after 24-day nationals, because there was a few issues around being Aboriginal and everything and making teams, and I went, I don't want to deal with this anymore, and I walked away from the sport because of those issues. I got into cycling when mid-2015, but I'd actually cycled when I was little, so I've got little photos of me when I was cycling and everything. And I found my cycling clothes, my little cycling clothes, underneath the house when we were cleaning out some stuff. And I'm like, oh, let's just give this a go again. I had to get track bikes, had to get equipment. Mum took loans out to get my first ever track bike. Big equipment, like, bikes aren't cheap. And then I have to have modifications to my bikes, which, again, are not cheap. So, yeah, Mum had to take out loans because she's only a pensioner, so it was 100 days out from the Rio opening ceremony when I was told and it was announced that I was selected. I just went in with an open mind. That's all you can do at the Paralympics because you don't know who's going to be there. You don't know. You've just got that chance. You're on the line. Just go for it. So I just went for it, hell for leather, and I crossed the line in a massive PB. I took like 2.5 seconds off my time. I broke the Paralympic record along the way as well, and that's when I knew after that I got the silver, and I was like, oh wow, I got this silver. You sort of just look back on it now and you're like, oh wow, there's actually a lot of people there in the grandstand. You could just look up and it just kept going and going and going. You sort of just live in the moment when you're there, and then you look back and you're like, oh wow, it was actually a great thing to make it there. I'm so grateful that my mum and my nan have been there for me and to help. Even though mum's on the pension, she's done everything that she can to get me to where I am now. So I'm so grateful for that. She's gone without to let me achieve my dreams that I've been after. And I love being a strong Aboriginal woman and to show other Aboriginal women that you can achieve your dreams if you want to. And that's what I live for, helping other kids with disabilities and adults getting into sport, even if they're disabled or non-disabled. It's important. If you just keep going, you will get the last laugh, not the bullies, no one else. You're the one that sits back and goes, well, look where I am. I'm doing a lot more than what you are doing. Dream it, believe it, and you can be it. That's my motto. I live by.
That was the inspirational story of Amanda Reid overcoming bullying and learning difficulties to become Sportsperson of the Year at this year's NAIDOC Week Awards.
Let my children be. Let them free. I just want to see their part of me. Let my children be.
Ruby Hunter there with the song Let My Children Be.
Want to kickstart your journalism career? Storyology is the Walkley Foundation's Festival of Journalism and Storytelling. Next week, the Darlinghurst Theatre will be buzzing with the best journalists from across Australia and overseas. Join us for discussion, debate, and the chance to make career-defining contacts. Tickets at walkleys.com. Students can use the offer code STUDENT at the checkout to get 20% off full Storyology passes. Storyology sponsors of 2SER.
1917, the Great Strike, marks the centenary of one of Australia's largest industrial conflicts with a six-week-long exhibition at Carriage Works. The multimedia exhibition features large-scale historical images, moving footage, oral history excerpts, and music and poetry alongside commissioned artworks to tell the story of a movement that started in the old Everleigh Railway workshops. Produced by the City of Sydney and Carriage Works, the free exhibition runs until August 27. For more information, visit whatson.sydney and search for Great Strike.
Sponsors of 2SER.
You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally to the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes.
And Sophia Carvajal.
I'm Michael Kirby, and you are listening to Radio Atticus. Radio Atticus is part of the Community Radio Network. I was formerly a Justice of the High Court of Australia with no time to listen to this, but now I sit glued to Radio Atticus.
You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. And that's about all we have time for in this edition. We hope you enjoy the show.
Radio Atticus is broadcast nationally to the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER.
If you want more, why not tune into our podcast on www.2ser.com/Radio Atticus.
Tune in again next week at the same time and place for your regular dose of justice and the law here on Radio Atticus. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes.
And I'm Sophia Carvajal.